Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Dr. Lou Need, and today I have a phenomenal guest here with me today, and you can just feel his energy already. His name is Chris Allman. So there are fewer than 1,000 billionaires in the U.S., and Chris himself has worked hand in glove with four of them. So that already sets this man's caliber to a different level, right? He has in his new book, Four Billionaires and a Parking Attendant, Success Strategies of Wealthy, Powerful, and Just Plain Wise, Chris brings readers inside the minds and methods of the rich and the powerful. Private equity, bigwigs, CEOs, senior government executives, you name it. He has had some FaceTime with these individuals, and I'm really excited to have him on board. So with no further ado, Chris, welcome to the show.
Dr. Lanid, thank you so much for having me. It's a real blessing, and I'm super happy to be with you and with your listeners.
Yes, yes. It's a pleasure, Chris. Tell me about what you did before getting in contact and being able to work with some of the billionaires.
Yeah, it's really amazing when you think there are fewer than 1,000 in the United States, and I've had the pleasure and honor of working with four of them. So I've had this really fascinating career. I'm just so blessed. I've been in the communications career for 37 years. Mm-hmm. So I've worked on Capitol Hill here in Washington. I've worked in the White House. I've worked at an investment firm called the Carlyle Group for 18 mm-hmm. years. And I then started my own little PR firm. So I'm a one-man band. And in the course of my career, I've had this pretty unusual opportunity to work with some of the most successful people in their professions in the world, like people who run major companies as CEOs, people who are billionaires, four of them, right. And people who are CEOs and chairmen. And what's neat about my experience is I've worked with them personally. So I observe mm-hmm. them in action, and then I learn from them.
You're like Napoleon Hill back in the days, right? Where he worked with all these big people in the different industries that were, you know, move makers, right? They were doing all revamping industries, but it was just him interviewing and talking to them and learning from them.
That's exactly it. You know, one of the things that's cool about my new book is that since I work with them personally, all the 50 lessons are based on anecdotes. So like very specific things that happened that I learned from, and they all kind of direct you towards learning how to be your best. It's all about being your best, not best relative to someone else. It's just being your best, using your God-given talents to achieve as much as you're capable of.
Yeah. And that is really sound advice, because there's a lot of noise. It's very hard to find your passion and kind of hone in on what is it that you're good in, what your talents are, God-given talents, and how to actually utilize that. So I'm glad you're going to be able to shed some insight on how to hone in onto that. I'm giving that you found the expertise from these individuals themselves. Yeah, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich is what comes to mind when I'm speaking with you. So let's talk about some of the things that you've gathered while working with these four individuals.
Sure. So they are incredibly driven people. They have purpose. And purpose is so important. Whether you're a billionaire or a parking attendant, as the title of the book kind of lays out. So purpose is all about, you know, a direction or a goal in life. And when you have purpose, then you're able to steer towards it. And when you face obstacles, because we all know there are tons of obstacles in life, you have the tools necessary to be able to go through it, over it, under it, you name it, to try to make sure you're staying on track. So all of these lessons, there are 50 lessons, and they're in these 8 categories about being purposeful, being innovative. And then there's some really cool categories that you wouldn't necessarily expect in a book with featuring billionaires, about being humble, about giving back to others in the community, about building bridges to people who think differently from you. So there are all sorts of things, different types of lessons. And I'm happy to share a couple if you would like.
Yeah, I would. Oh, let's pick specific ones. There's a big notion around giving back. And so you saying that giving back to community, you know, it's adding value, adding, helping other people. Let's talk about that notion of, like, as you receive, as you gain wealth, a lot of the wealthy people have foundations they donate to. A lot of them have their contribution that is, like, allocated every year that they give out. Let's talk about the power in that.
Yes. And what's really important about giving back is that everyone should give back. You know, the word philanthropy is not just rich people writing checks. It's an ancient Greek word that actually means love of humanity. So whether you have money or you have time or you have talent or wisdom, we should all be giving back. One of the reasons why I've enjoyed working with these very powerful people is that, like, every single one of them has been very generous with their time, their talent, and their checkbook as well. And for example, one of them named David Rubenstein, who is the founder of the Carlyle Group, which is a big investment firm, he dedicates a lot of his money to repairing monuments and memorials in Washington, D.C. The Washington Monument, when it was damaged by an earthquake, he is currently, this is really exciting, building visitor centers underneath the Lincoln Memorial, where Martin Luther King gave his famous speech in 1968, the Jefferson Memorial building visitor center under there as well. He paid for the panda program at the National Zoo. Another one of the founders at Carlyle, Bill Conway, he gives money to homeless shelters, tens of millions of dollars, to make sure these people have a better opportunity in life. And that inspires me. And this is incredible. So Bill Conway would roam the halls at the Carlyle Group handing out gift cards to Dunkin' Donuts. And he would say, I will give you a stack of these if you promise to give them to homeless people. And imagine that. This is a billionaire who could just be in his office making more billions, roaming the halls, giving gift cards to regular employees, encouraging them to help other people. And to this day, I still carry those gift cards in my wallet. I gave out one yesterday, I gave out one before. I get to know homeless people. I even give them a little card that tells them where to go for help. And I learned that from a billionaire. Right. So whether you're giving away $10 million or just a $10 gift card, it's important to give back.
And it opens the flow to receive more. Because my husband actually do something very similar with McDonald's cards. We give them out to $10 gift cards to our homeless people, and we just buy them and distribute them that way. But it opens up the flow so you can continue to receive. You know, you can't just be a bottlenecked and just kind of get, and don't actually put it back out.
That is such an important point. And it's really exciting to hear that you and your husband do that with gift cards as well. Because I don't like to give cash, but if you give a gift card, then you're pretty confident they're going to get food, which is really what they need. You know, and this notion of the bottleneck and giving back. And I mean, my faith system says, love God, love your neighbor. And they go hand in hand. If you truly love God, you must love your neighbor. And so the importance of counting my blessings and then giving back to people in need has been a big priority in my life.
Yeah. And we're grateful for your generosity, of course, because it just takes one to make that shift, that change, right? People can be inspired by and actually you're leading by example. So it's really nice. Tell us about Whistlegrams. I found that very intriguing.
So for your listeners' information, I am the four-time international whistling champion. Like that. So I'm a very accomplished whistler. Now, I've been able to whistle in the Oval Office for the President of the United States, and I've whistled with symphony orchestras. And also, I have this little whistling ministry where I whistle happy birthday 650 times a year to people, like friends and strangers. I mean, you name it. And a whistlegram is when I whistle happy birthday on my little iPhone here. Yeah. And then I record it and then send it to them in a text or an email. And Dr. Leanid, it is amazing the feedback I get from people, because I'm honoring their life, making them feel special. And then they write me these sweet notes that say, my day wouldn't be complete without hearing your whistlegram from you. So I'm doing it because I want to honor them, but their appreciation just warms my heart and makes me feel special too. And, you know, there's no greater gift than life. So whenever we can honor it, we should. And so that's my special gift, is this ability to whistle. And then I have a duty to share it with people in a way that brings them joy as well.
What a unique talent. Can you give us a little snippet? It doesn't have to be long, but can you do? You know, I had to ask.
Sure. Yeah. So here's a little happy birthday. It goes on and on, but it's a lot of fun.
That was fun. You got me all lit up. That was amazing. And you are not, are you able to monetize this? Are you? Because I mean, that's unique and special. It's a service.
So it's interesting. So the happy birthday whistles, I do not accept money for those. I do them just because it makes people happy. I do perform with symphonies, and I get paid for that. And I do kind of corporate gigs where I will tell stories about whistling in the Oval Office and all the other crazy things I've done in my career with whistling. And then I'll tell stories, I'll whistle songs, and then I deliver this message of that everyone has a simple gift in life. Mine happens to be whistling, and you have gifts and your listeners have gifts. And I think we have a duty to share them. So I do talks like that. So I can monetize it somewhat, but as one of my bosses once told me, don't quit your day job, which is corporate communications, which I love. So I'm very happy doing that. And then throughout my career, you know, 36 years, I've had kind of my career. And then on top of it is like this overlay of the whistling. So I try to integrate my whistling into my day jobs by whistling happy birthday for people or whistling at events, at work. When I was at the Carlyle Group, is a big investment firm, they would have an annual event with 1,000 people managing trillions of dollars. And they would always have me whistle songs, which is kind of crazy when you think of it. But I always try to be professional about it, but have fun at the same time.
Yeah, it's very hard for you not to integrate it into your life, right? Your daily life, because it's part of you. It's a gift, it's a talent that's been bestowed upon you. And not a lot of people have it.
Yeah. So, you're right. It's exactly right. I love the way you phrase that.
Yeah. Somebody asked Morgan Freeman, if you were not acting, what would you be doing? He said, if I was driving a cab, I would still be acting. So,
wow. I love that.
That's you. That's it, right? You got your talent. In your daily life, you're applying what your gift is. It's easy for you. You enjoy it. It brings you so much joy.
It does. It really does. It's, just on the way today, I whistled for a couple of hours today. I have a big concert coming up in December with the Alexandria, Virginia Symphony Orchestra. So I've been rehearsing a lot to make sure I do a good job. And so that will be fun. And whistling, your lips are muscles, so you have to exercise them. And the best way to do that is to actually whistle. And it strengthens them and gets me ready for the concert.
Yeah. You're multifaceted, now an author, a very well popular book, Four Billionaires and a Parking Attendant, Success Strategies of the Wealthy, the Powerful, and Just Plain Wise. Let's talk about some of the, because we love habits, we love routines here, we love success stories. That's why we do this, so we can learn from you as the successful business person. Let's talk about some bad behavior lessons that you learned? And then we'll talk about the good as well, but let's focus, let's do the first three on bad, on about wealth and power.
Yeah. So I'm glad you asked about this, because some people have said, oh, your book is just all the happy, happy stuff. And I say, well, there are 50 lessons that are very positive and that are worth emulating. However, I learned a lot of things you shouldn't do.
Right.
And there are 10 things in the book about the things you shouldn't do. Here are a couple of them. One is just don't be mean. You know, sometimes rich and powerful people think they can be mean to people just because they're not as rich and powerful as them. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm not rich and powerful, I look at that and I say, well, I shouldn't be mean to anyone either. So I've learned from that. So I've observed it and learned, which is really how this book works, is I observe these lessons, I tell stories, I've learned from it, and the reader can learn. Yeah. Another thing is too often people let their emotion rule how they think and behave. Now, emotion plays a role, of course. My perfect ratio is 80% logic, 20% emotion, because logic helps us deal with facts and helps bring balance to the way mm-hmm. you think. And if there's too much emotion, then you're kind of fired up and you're not looking at the facts and you're not being balanced. So don't let emotion rule. And I've seen that a lot. Like, you might think that someone is super rich and powerful, they always act in this logical way, and they don't. So don't let emotion rule you. It's a tempering or leavening agent, but it shouldn't rule you. And a third thing is what I call avoid groupthink. And groupthink is like the committee. Committees can play a positive role, but too often committees they make the rough smooth and the crooked straight, and they get rid of all originality and anything that could potentially offend anyone. And then you just get kind of this milquetoast, boring stuff. And so groupthink is bad, and it crushes innovation. And I've seen that happen countless times, where you got 10 people in a room and they say, well, we have to do what the group thinks is best. I'm like, oh my gosh, and you're not going to get anything innovative out of a group, that's for sure. So those are three things of the 10 that I found very compelling of things not to do.
Yeah, and the conformity too, conforming to the norm, and that really stifle creativity big time and cannot see outside the box.
Yes, exactly.
How have some of the billionaires you work with overcome those?
The best, what they find, well, if you're really paying attention and you have purpose, meaning you're here right now and you want to be there someday, you understand that the straightest line possible between here and there is the right way to do it. And then even the smart and the powerful people will realize that if they're being mean, good people won't want to work for them. So maybe I should stop being mean. Or if I let emotion rule too much, then I'm not getting things done. I'm interrupting my mojo, so to speak, or my energy or my momentum. And also, you know, really successful people will realize that groupthink is just so, so bad. But sometimes it takes practice to realize these things. But a big part of this book is kind of the how. How do you take these lessons and stuff them in your brain and actually learn from them to be your best? And the key is being humble, which is another one of the key lessons in this book, is that almost all of these bigwigs that I work for are pretty humble people. Might be hard to believe to have a humble billionaire, but they are open-minded. And that's really a key part of their success, is that they don't have all the answers. And they surround themselves with smart people who are committed to the cause. And if you're humble and open-minded, you can learn so many things. You can adjust when you're making mistakes. And you are much more focused as a result.
Yeah, taking mental note and surrounding yourself with the right people. Just like Steve Jobs mentioned, he said, I hire smart people to tell me what to do, not so I can tell them what to do. It sounds like that's a lot of what the billionaires are doing.
That's exactly it. I had one of my bosses, he would come in every day with like 5 new ideas. And our job as the staff and his advisors was to help him sift through those ideas. What were the crazy ones? And let's get rid of those. What are the pretty good ones? And maybe we'll be able to develop those. And what are the really, really good ones? And let's focus on those and commit time and energy to them. And so rather than just try to do it all by himself, he was very good at generating ideas, but by having smart people around him, he was able to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff and then focus on the most high value opportunities.
Yeah. And you need the right people around you. I'm sure there's masterminds involved as well. So let's talk about three good behaviors. Is being humble one of them?
Absolutely. Being humble is really important. I mean, ultimately, I think humble people get more done.
Right.
Because they have a more loyal staff. They are more open to ideas. And you know what, Dr. Lanid? They're just nicer to be around too. I mean, if you're around kind of obnoxious, it's like someone who's really successful, but they're obnoxious. You're like, it's just kind of painful. So humble people are just like nicer to be around.
Yeah.
Another important lesson on the good side is this one. It's got a cute title. It's called "You Have a Dog, I Have a Dog, Let's Be Friends." And it's an amazing story about building bridges with people who naturally would not agree with you. And I think in our society today, you know, we have a lot of that. There's a lot of division. And this lesson is where the head of a federal agency here in Washington, a man by the name of Arthur Levitt, who ran the Securities and Exchange Commission, which regulates the stock markets, had to work, and he's a Democrat, he had to work with Phil Graham, who was the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee. And Arthur walks in Phil's office and sees a photo of a dog on Phil's desk. And says, "Hey, is that your dog?" And Phil says, "Yeah, that's my dog." And Arthur says, "Hey, I have Labrador retrievers also." And they got to be friends because they both shared this love of Labrador retrievers. So that friendship and that common interest helped them bridge kind of the ideological gap that was sometimes between them, to the point where Arthur would actually go to Phil before he made certain announcements to get his opinion, to try to get a reaction from someone who might not agree with him. And that could affect the way we presented this new regulatory undertaking, for example. And then Arthur also started mentoring Phil's son, and it's been 30 years and they are very close to this day. So by having this commonality, they were building bridges and they were serving the country better as a result of it. So that affects me when I meet someone who's different from me. You know, my objective should be to find common ground with them and look for similarities, and then importantly, humanize. You could disagree with someone on policy, but still love them as a fellow child of God, as a human. And that is where we must always start, is start with the humanity and then try to understand where people are coming from with their views on different issues. Inevitably, you'll learn something. Now, you may not change 180 degrees your views, but even if you learn 5, 10, 15% and you shift a bit, then you're finding commonality. And that's a super important lesson. And I wish more politicians today would practice it.
Yeah, the contrast is good. We need the contrast. Yeah.
Now, may I share one more? I've got a really good one here. So the title of my book indicates it's Four Billionaires and a Parking Attendant. So the parking attendant is in the book because he chose to be happy. And let me explain. So I would drive into the garage every day. And for 4 years, this young man parked my car. He was an immigrant from Ethiopia. And we got to be friends. And no matter how cold it was in the winter or hot in the summer, he was always happy. And I said, this is just amazing. Because I would then get in the elevator and go up 30 or 40 feet to the second or third floor. And there's literally three billionaires, like right in a row, and a whole bunch of other bigwigs. And they were not always happy. And I say, how is that possible that the guy in the basement who doesn't make a ton of money is happy, but these big wig billionaires, you know, maybe they're happy and maybe they're not. And I concluded that the man, the parking attendant, his name is Sala, he chose to be happy. He looked at his gifts and said, I'm going to be grateful for these things. I'm not going to focus on the shortcomings in my life. Or like one of his kids has a learning disability. So he didn't let those things just like ruin his day. He focused on the positive. He managed the challenges. And he has this beautiful smile. When he became an American citizen, I took my daughters to his naturalization ceremony. It was an amazing experience. And if any of your listeners have never been to one, they must go because it is a beautiful experience. that compares with nothing. It is so unique. So choosing to be happy is really, really important lesson. He earned his way into this book.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great story. Thank you for sharing. And it's a choice. Being happy, waking up and identifying your emotion, right? How you feel. It goes back to the second one you talked about. Don't let your emotion run you. You can choose to be happy. It's a choice that we make every day, like taking a shower.
It is. Yeah, exactly. That's very well put.
Yeah. I know the billionaires you work with, they must have a morning routine, something that helps them prepare and show up for the day. Would you mind sharing some of the stuff you heard from them?
Yes. So getting a good sleep and it's really important. You want to feel good and have energy. And they all wake up early and get a good start for the day when it's quiet and you can think and you can catch up perhaps from the day before or plan out your day effectively. So they were waking up at 5:30 every day. That's really important. And being well informed. So one of the billionaires at Carlyle read 7 newspapers every day.
Wow.
So he would just gobble them up every morning to be well informed. And then all that knowledge would help him better understand where to invest so that we would wise investments on behalf of our investors. And I'd say overall, the best morning routine is about having a bright outlook, is a sense of gratitude for the day. One of the founders said he's so blessed that he levitates out of bed with gratitude, that he's so excited for the day. Yeah. And, you know, people like that are just nice to be around.
Yeah.
Because no matter what happens, you know, they try to be grateful. It doesn't mean they're happy all the time. And sometimes they're grumpy, but they try to be grateful. And just the visual of levitating out of bed because you're just eager to make a difference in your company, in your family, in the world around you. Like those are the kind of things that I think really successful people will do.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing those as well, because we love to learn from successful people. So let's talk about your morning routine. How do you get up, dress up, and show up?
Well, I've tried to learn from these big wigs. So I go to bed at 10:30, wake up at 5:30. So I get, you know, a good 7 hours of sleep. I'm 60 years old. So that's enough for me right now. Maybe I'll need more as I get older. We'll see. Mm-hmm. And I try to levitate out of bed, even though my lower back doesn't always cooperate. But it is a spirit. I eat a very healthy and yummy breakfast. I make a fresh fruit smoothie every day for my wife. And it used to be 3 kids, but 2 of them are in college now. So for the 3rd and youngest child, she gets a smoothie every day. My wife usually makes me like a nice bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. So I try to eat a good, healthy meal. And then I try to be well-informed also. Check all my email because I have clients that are around the world. And, you know, when it's 7 in the morning or 6:30 in the morning in Washington, it's, 6:30 p.m. in China. So you've got to respond as early in the morning to clients and, I have a whole bunch of newsletters that I read that are like aggregate the news, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post. There's one called Politico and another one called Axios. They're really good aggregators of the most important news and commentary. So I go through all of those every morning. So I feel like I can hit the ground running in terms of sleep, diet, and preparation for the day in terms of gathering all this information.
Yeah, we get that a lot, that the morning routine starts the night before and it's getting adequate sleep and that restful, rejuvenating sleep as well. Because, you know, there's a certain time, if you go to bed past like 10:30, 11 o'clock, you don't get that same rejuvenated sleep because your melatonin levels are at their peak during that time frame. So you got to capitalize on it. A lot of successful people do. So Tony Robbins, Oprah Winfrey. And so you're right in line with that. Going to bed right at 10:30.
Well, that's very good company to be in line with. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. What are some, so we got how you stimulate, you get stimulating content. What about exercising, meditation for you, gratitude journal? What do those fall into your day?
Yes. So I do keep a journal. I've kept a journal for 22 years about my children's lives. So I'm up to, this is crazy, it's 450,000 word document. And wow. When they go to high school and when they go to college, they get a typeset leather bound version of it. And so journaling, I enjoy that. I pray, give thanks to God for my blessings. In terms of exercise, I have a personal trainer that I go to once a week, which I really enjoy. It's really changed my back. My back feels better because of him. And I love to bicycle. So I'm a serious bicyclist. And it's really good for aerobic activity. And that's my main activities.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, and it gives you that energy because you got to take care of the vessel as well, the body that you are residing in.
That's exactly what a perfect way to phrase it. Take care of the vessel. I like that.
Yeah. Chris, tell us, where can we find your book? How can we connect with you?
Oh, thank you. So my book is 4 Billionaires and a Parking Attendant, and it is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. And they can go to my website to connect with me. It's chrisullman.com. That's chrisullman.com. And there's all sorts of information on there about my whistling. Also, all the different interviews I've done on the Tonight Show and the Today Show and you name it. I've been on tons of media. And then on YouTube, there's tons of videos of me whistling the national anthem at major league sporting events like the Nationals and the Wizards, the Texas Rangers. So there's lots of fun things on the whistling side as well.
You're just having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, life, you never know when your time is up. So you have to make the most of every day. And along those lines is one final lesson I'll note really quick is one of my bosses has this expression called sprinting to the finish. And it doesn't mean he's wants to die quickly. It means he wants to jam in as much as he can before he dies. So he is producing books, TV shows, podcasts, and making investments. And that has really inspired me to write this book. I wrote another book about my whistling, and I'm going to write a screenplay about Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. That's my next project. Wow. And because you just don't know, you can get disease. I could be hit while bicycling. So every day is a gift. And we must maximize our time here.
Yeah. And you're optimizing your creativity, that purpose, that alignment. Don't put a period where God wants to put a comma, right? The producer, ooh, author.
I never heard that. I love that. I love that. That's really good. Oh, that's really cool. I'm going to remember that. Yeah.
Don't put a comma where God wants to. Don't put a period where God wants to put a comma.
No, don't put a period where. Yeah.
God wants to put a comma because you are all those things and you're living in that purpose and there's more to come. There's more room for creativity, more room for just producing so much more and who you're becoming. It's amazing.
Well, that is exactly it. And for your listeners, if people are wondering, how do they find purpose? I think the key is you pray for guidance. You kind of survey all the things you've done in your life and where you've struggled and where you've excelled. You talk to people who love you and know you and will give you honest feedback. And then you explore, you try different things and see what excites you and where your heart and your head come into sync with each other in terms of interest and ability. And it's good to think outside of oneself and how can I help others, so all those things together can help people find purpose.
That's well put. I love the way you just simplify that. I've never heard it so simplistic. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. We wrap up, give us either your favorite quote, Bible verse. We love to collect these.
All right. This is three words, and it's just life is difficult. Now, you might say that seems kind of depressing. However, it's from the great Buddha. And the great Buddha said, life is difficult. However, if you truly embrace that belief, it becomes less difficult because you manage your expectations. If you think life is going to be rosy every day, you're going to be disappointed a lot of the time. But if you accept the fact that life is difficult, then many times it will be less difficult and you will be happy as a result. So it actually becomes less difficult. So it's actually in sync with a formula, my happiness formula, which is H equals A over E, and it stands for happiness equals actual over expected. And this notion of life is difficult has to do with the E, managing the E, the denominator. And if you don't expect it to be sunny every day, or if you don't expect life to be just as rosy every day, you'll actually be a happier person.
In the midst of that, find a way to feel good and be happy in whatever comes your way.
Yes, find the silver lining. Totally agree with that. Yes.
Amazing. Chris, it's been such a pleasure and joy connecting with you. Thank you for coming on and sharing with us today.
Well, Dr. Lanid, you're a really wonderful, lovely person, really great questions, and you're doing a great service and to your listeners, and it's an honor to be with you. So thank you for this opportunity.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, all right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.